The Corolla Drinks Wine Club is back, offering you the best deals on 3, 6, and 12 packs of Mangria. Aside from discounts on each and every bottle, with a 3-pack, you'll get a custom actual chicken shit ticket signed by the Ace Man himself. With a 6-pack, you'll get the signed ticket, plus an exclusive shirt with every shipment only available to Wine Club members. We'll kick it off with the Ace Man's definitive taco rankings t-shirt designed by Corolla on paper. And with the 12-pack, you'll get the ticket, 3 custom shirts, plus a special invitation for you and a guest to the Corolla Family Summer Barbecue, held at our studio and hosted by Lynette and Adam. You'll eat incredible food, meet Adam, Brian, Gina, myself, and the lackeys, and get a tour of the ACS studio. Plus, you'll get to see each and every one of Ace's cars, including the magical 935. It all goes down June 22nd and is only for you beautiful 12-pack members. So head to CorollaDrinks.com and pick your tier today. This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Corolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice. Got a minute. Get it on. And welcome to the best hour in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Corolla. It's Mark Garagus over there. Where's there?
Today I'm in New York City. As people listen to this, I'll probably be back in the jurisdiction.
We're excited to have you back. I got to say, Mark, this whole Kaepernick thing and NFL settlement and all the Jussie Smollett stuff and the rumors of you being involved with that, I have literally had dreams about you like 2 times out of the last 6 nights. I literally have dreamt about walking near your house.
I feel really bad because I have postponed Lynette 3 times this week, and I didn't know how to break it to her that the day job was getting in the way.
I walk my dog. I pass your home. I think about what's Mark doing. Where is he? So there's so much to catch up on. So first,
we start with Cap.
Yeah, let's start with Cap.
So somebody just sent me something that was at Panthers.com because Grill Bill Vogt, looks like, was asking, he was connecting the dots. Is there any chance that the Panthers sign Kaepernick? What do you think about that?
I have 2 heads on it. One head is, in this Kardashian world we're living in, you'd be a fool not to have this guy on your team. Think about all the press and all the excitement it would garner. On the other hand, the NFL is so buttoned down and so old school that I think a younger, newer owner would think, in a world where any publicity is good publicity, this would be great. And the older buttoned down guys don't want the distractions. So to me, it makes complete sense to me, except for the average age of an NFL team owner is 77 and 9 months, and they don't come from that world.
Speaking of 77 and 9 months, poor Bob Kraft. I mean, there's so many comments I can make. First of all, for the Panthers, can you think, if I were the owner, there's only one thing I would think about. If I sign Colin Kaepernick and I put out a Black Panther number 7 jersey, am I going to be able to make enough to supply the demand for that jersey? I mean, I think it would become the most iconic NFL, clearly the largest selling jersey of all time. And I give that advice freely and without charging because I can't imagine a better combo than a Kaepernick Black Panther, Carolina Panther jersey.
Not only that, not only the best-selling jersey of all time, but the best-selling shirt of all time. Move over, I'm with stupid. This would be the new leader in the clubhouse of shirts.
And, you know, I wonder what would happen because his icon tee went on sale for Nike the other day and sold out some incredible number in like 2 hours. I mean, it's just insanity. I mean, you cannot believe the demand for anything merchandise related for Collins. Just, it's incredible. I see them everywhere I go.
How is there much? So Cap, I don't want to say lays low, but I don't see him making the rounds. Is that intentional? I'm sure it's intentional. I'm sure he gets invited onto every late night show in the country and every sports talk show and every ESPN, blah, 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 blah. So he is not wanting to talk. Why?
He's not wanting to talk, number one. But number two, I have said this before, maybe on this show, if I have, pardon me for having incipient dementia, but I have walked the streets with some of the most highest profile people in the world. And I mean, whether it's Mike Tyson or Michael Jackson, or I mean, I give you, you know, a laundry list of names, I've never encountered like what happens when you walk on the street with Colin. It's just astonishing. You can't go anywhere. You can't move. You can't do anything. I mean, people mob him everywhere you go. It's really quite a phenomenon that I've never seen. I mean, I've walked the street with I remember walking down Wilshire one day to go to a jams mediation with Mike Tyson, and I thought that was bad, but that was nothing compared to what happens when you walk down the street with Colin.
Well, is he sort of sequestering himself? I mean, I don't see him on TMZ going out to a restaurant. I don't see him courtside at a Lakers game. Is that part of his psychological makeup, or is he trying to stay out?
He's a very focused, I'm always teasingly say he's the fittest vegan I've ever seen. He works out hours every day. He's at the top of his game, literally in terms of physical condition. That's obvious. As soon as you see him, you just can't even believe what kind of shape he's in. And he's only, I want to say, 31. So he's not that old in superior physical shape, and he spends a lot of time focused on his work and on keeping in shape and things of that nature. He's just a focused, really mature young man. A pleasure to be around, a wonderful client to have. And I had thought, if you had asked me before 3 hours ago, I would have told you that the most likely places are Carolina for him to sign, or what's his name? Baltimore, where Harbaugh is.
Yeah.
And I would have said the third most likely spot would be Bob Kraft and the Patriots, but Bob's got, you know, poor Bob has got apparently had a happy ending, and that's. They've transformed that into human trafficking or something. Have you seen this?
Well, first thing I was saying, yes, on my podcast. Actually, I think it's going to air on Monday, which is I said, you tell me if this is correct. If you run a business and you run a car wash and you are taking Nicaraguan people and forcing them at gunpoint to clean my Jaguar, I'm just going to a car wash and dropping my car off and picking it up. I don't feel responsible for your business and who you're doing and what you're doing over there. If Crafty wants to go into a massage place and get a rub and tug, that's fine. And that's between him and his God and him and his girlfriend. But that's the human trafficking part. Unless it's advertised, I don't think that one is on him.
I couldn't agree more. There must be something I'm missing. I do not understand this at all. And it's a, you know, it became meme worthy virtually instantly. It's all over the internet. Gary's probably got some of them. But first, you know what I want to do? Speaking of happy endings, True Car.
Oh, that's a
60
good ending.
Seconds. Yeah, 60 seconds. Speaking of happy endings, that's exactly how long this commercial lasts. You know what else you can do in about a minute? What do you think, Adam? Get an offer for your car.
That's right.
With True Car. Was that what you were going to say?
Get an offer for your car, yeah.
Yeah, and the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups, or just listen to my voice, you can get a true cash offer. Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone. You can do it from home. Just go to TrueCar, enter your license plate number, and watch how your car's details pop up. Answer a few questions. You'll get an accurate true cash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. It's not easy. After that, bring your car in. They'll check it out with you together. You can ask questions, get the answers you need so there's no surprises. Then simply leave with your check, go hammer it, or trade in your car for a new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade your car, check out TrueCar today.
Hey, so a million questions for you. We've talked quite a bit about the tactical sort of missteps of Kathy Griffin having a press conference or Jussie Smollett going on Good Morning America or whatever it is. Are you advising Cap to just lay low, or is that all his idea?
I think that he's always been focused on getting signed first. I don't think he's purposely not doing it. And so I can't reveal attorney client, but I would just say I think his approach has been a successful and thoughtful one. And so I obviously don't disagree with him in the least.
Well, you think about the governor of Virginia, you think about all these guys, they step out in front of the cameras and they get over their skis, and there's nothing better than nothing in terms of ginning up controversy or getting, I cannot believe that how many people make the mistake of going, find me a microphone and a camera and let me air my truth. So tactically, I think it's a great idea. Now, there's an interesting story, and I have a few. And here's a question for you, Mark Garagos, and you can answer or not answer. Was the settlement higher than most people think?
I can't answer.
Okay. All right. Now, I'll bring over the Don Julio. All right. The next question is the kid who is standing in front of the Indian elder.
Nick Sandman,
and right. The AKA Chief Nut Job, turned out to be a disaster. That kid, who's he suing? Is he suing the Washington
Post?
Washington Post. He's suing the Washington Post. He is lawyered up, and he's suing the Washington Post. What about that? What do you think? Does he have a case? Phone message just dropped off.
Yeah, it must have. There's nothing here on our end. We will get him back on the phone call.
What's that story, Gary?
Okay, I'm told he's on. You want to try him again?
Yes, I'll try that.
Can you check Mark, and make sure? Is his lawyer Lynn Wood?
I think so.
Yes.
So, yeah, Lynn Wood specializes in this area of the law. When I was representing, almost 20 years ago, actually, it was 20 years ago, Gary Condon, who was a congressman who was suspect in the Chandra Levy disappearance and ultimately the murder. Gary, after that, and his wife hired Lynn Wood, and they took action against a number of people, outlets, and things that had reported false stuff, and they did very well. And I became very friendly with Lynn and have admired his work over the years. He just does tremendous work. The last thing you'd want to be is somebody falsely accused who was vindicated and have Lynn Wood coming at you.
Well, he evidently is not only going after the Washington Post, he's going after many news outlets, and he may be going after some celebrities that sent some tweets circling back to Kathy Griffin trying to get this guy's address. I mean, you tell me, there is no, one could say, well, Kathy Griffin was tweeting, get me this, dox this guy, get me this guy's home address. I feel like that is a call to action in a sense. Now, he was not injured, but there's an emotional injury to a 16-year-old. One could argue this kid's going to walk around like the one of the members of the Duke lacrosse team for the rest of his life.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that whole case, at least from my standpoint, is that turned very quickly. And I, you know, we're in an era where things tend to turn virtually on a dime. The pendulum swing, which you used to look at in terms of decades or 5 years or whatever, you know, Lynn Wood, do you remember Richard Jewell? That was the first case Lynn ever did. That was the, they call that the something park, Olympic Park bombing suspect. Remember that guy?
Atlanta Olympics. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Their thing was like, oh, this guy's fat and he lives with his mom. So guilty.
Exactly. So he must have done it. He must have done it. Now that took from start to finish with him, that took quite a while. That was not the case in this latest case that Lynn's got. And I think he also, if I'm not mistaken, he also represented the Ramseys as well.
JonBenet. Yeah. Richard Jewell. Richard Jewell dead at 44. Just a sidebar. So what about going after the Washington Post? What about them sort of weaponizing this story and really putting this kid in jeopardy? And here's the part I'd like you to drill down on. They didn't do their due diligence. They could have watched the rest of the tape, seen what factually happened. It was there. It was accessible to them, and they chose not to. They chose to paint a different picture.
Well, you know, it's a hot topic in the law right now. It'll be interesting to see how it gets resolved. Whether or not there is complete source protection, and when I say source protection, in this case, they could say, one of the things they discovered is that they have the whole tape. They decide to keep six portions of the tape. What did they know? Was it opinion? Was it not opinion? I mean, the Twitter sphere is populated with opinion, and I can't imagine that you're going to be able to sue people just based on tweets or things like that. But if you were to put together a case where it was something other than that, and there was no firm belief, or they were going with a narrative that was completely unsupported, then you'd have something.
Well, I think that's what he's going to do. I think he's going to
prove. Yeah, I think Lynn clearly will, right.
And then, again, I think he's going after them, and then he's going to break it on off to NBC and MSNBC and whatever. He's going to be able to prove this sort of narrative at a lot of news outlets. And I don't know if he's going to get to the Kathy Griffins of the world. And again, it's Twitter. There's no precedent, but this guy's a minor, and you're asking hundreds of thousands or millions of people, can we find his home address and essentially get him? That feels worthy.
It's very interesting the way that his complaint is filed too, and like some of the wording sticks out to me. He does name some of those other news outlets, and he puts it as a parallel to McCarthyism. It's very interesting the way Lynn is positioning this thing.
Well, I'm not litigious, and I don't like this world where everyone goes after everyone, but if you're dealing with a minor and you're going to take a story and spin it in such a way intentionally where that guy's life essentially is or could be ruined by the way you've spun this story because you have a narrative, then you should be liable for that.
You know, it's very interesting to me the kind of things or the kind of ways that we think you can do stuff now. I was thinking about Smollett yesterday and that arraignment in Chicago, and it was just, the whole thing was astonishing to me. I literally had a pit in my stomach as I was watching it. And the reason was for this idea that first the police chief's going to come out, and the police chief's going to do this press conference where demonstrably false stuff is stated. And then while a guy's in custody, when they haven't turned over the any discovery whatsoever, then they do a bond hearing on a case where the guy flew back. And I know all of this because I've been consulted on it. The guy flies back in state so he can be there to talk with the cops. And they basically come out after the bond hearing, after it's a 100-grand bond, and they do what can be best summarized as a closing argument by the prosecutor out there in front of the TV cameras. And then they say, okay, now go take a perp walk to a crazed mob of media and other onlookers. And all of this is done coincidentally, 96 hours before the mayoral election, when you've got a police chief who's in the hot seat. And then you got Rahm Emanuel making statements and prejudging the whole thing. And then you've got the idea that you've got R. Kelly getting indicted the very next day with the police chief there, who, as I said, is apparently hot to save his job. And you're basically announcing where the guy lives. At a certain point, there is a kind of reasonable and foreseeable consequences to some of these things.
So let's drill down here. First off, are you part of Jesse's legal team?
I think I would characterize myself as a advisor, and I would say that Tina was there, who works for me at the arraignment yesterday, but has not been admitted into Illinois yet.
FUBU lawyer. Mark Garagos, everybody. You're black. You need representation. Go with Mark Garagos. So now I'm thinking about this case, and I'm watching it unfold like everybody else. And I know, you're the guy, Michael Jackson, Scott Peterson. And I'm looking at this case, and people are telling me, oh, no, Mark's involved with this thing. And I'm thinking, but why? What's in it for him? Like, is there an injustice here?
There's a certain thing that literally, I was talking to somebody about it today. There's a visceral reaction that I get when it is a pile-on, when due process is trampled on. And that what happened yesterday, as I watched it unfold, and I could see it happening. I could see the build up to it. And obviously, not obviously, but I do have I get contacted on a lot of cases that are high profile. And as I looked into it, I started to get that kind of feeling in my gut that this is just, and people always say, well, why would you do something where, you can come on the heels of one case that you win and, why don't you relish in that? There is the whole reason I wanted to be a lawyer was to defend the underdog. So is this an underdog? Well, I will tell you, I've never, yesterday reminded me of something that I would see in a totalitarian country where they basically come out and they convict first. I mean, you cannot believe the number of the numbers of hate emails, for instance, or death threats and things of that just since yesterday, because this guy has the temerity to proclaim his innocence. It's astonishing to me. He hasn't seen a single police report, and people are already saying he should just plead guilty and go direct to sentencing. That's the kind of thing that drives me crazy. And you don't become to my mind, you don't become a lawyer for a popularity contest. I mean, you become a lawyer, and when you take the oath, there's a specific code section in the Business Professions Code that says just because it may damage your reputation or it may engender hate doesn't mean that you don't take somebody because of that. I mean, the counter argument, I suppose, people say, oh, well, if you get paid this, you get paid that. Trust me. At this point in my career, I can get paid doing a lot easier and less controversial ways.
You tell me if this is a fair statement, and maybe I won't apply it directly to Jussie because there may be some confidentiality issues with that. But is this a fair statement? You can get involved with a case because, A, you think the person didn't participate in the crime that they're being alleged they participated in, or B, how they were treated in the process after the event.
I believe fervently that the only thing that separates us and a functioning democracy is the right to a jury trial, number one. I think that's more important than the right to vote, frankly. I think the right to a jury trial is the ultimate only check against governmental abuse. And what I saw yesterday, I hate to overstate it, was governmental abuse. That was, you know, there are specific rules, model rules of ethics that govern what a prosecutor can say, what a prosecutor can do. And it was astonishing to me yesterday as to what was going on, and the media cheerleading it, and the media angry. I mean, there's a certain amount of anger in the media that basically on this case, where it's almost like we got hoodwinked, but now we're going to go, we're going to go in the opposite direction. And so I get it, and I get that in Chicago that it offends a lot of people and everything else, but that does not mean that you just say, okay, I'm going to just torture, light the Constitution on fire. I'm going to take due process and I'm going to sweep it away. I mean, I can't tell you the number of people who just say he's guilty. I can't even believe he's going to try to defend himself. I mean, it's astonishing to me.
Is it your contention that there are things about this case that we don't know that have not been reported in the media?
Absolutely. I mean, what has happened in this case, we will discuss it more on the next episode, but what has happened in this case and the story that has been told and the narrative that has been woven by law enforcement, it's already being challenged today as we speak. It's not even 24 hours old. Part of what the demonstrably law enforcement sources were pushing back against what was said yesterday, it's literally just 24 hours since he was walked out of there. So this thing is going to unfold. This thing is going to surprise people, and there's a lot of twists and turns. And once again, it's going to be that usual thing, and I've seen this movie before. You can convict somebody in the court of public opinion immediately. It's easy to do. It's simple to do. But I would sit tight before I start to believe for a second that what you've heard bears any resemblance. There's one of the crazy things about this is not one person I have heard has asked the most basic, simple question. And that is, well, what about the two guys who supposedly you had in custody for 48 hours? Did you charge them? Did you give them immunity? Did you do anything with them? Why? You said they changed their story in the 48th hour. Why did they change their story? Was it lawyer driven? Did they consult with the lawyer while they were in custody? And who was the lawyer? What was said? I mean, there's absolutely no critical thinking. It's just they caught somebody. It didn't fit the original narrative that everyone believed. And boom. Tell me, there's a lot more to this than meets the eye.
Nobody traditionally, or you can tell me, traditionally in these kinds of crimes, I don't mean assault crimes, but in the false allegation world, nobody ever does prison time, right?
Well, normally.
Normally.
Correct. Normally. No, that's not, but normally, nobody's got $100,000 bail. No, normally, nobody is ransacked wall to wall and forced to walk through a media scrum and be basically assaulted at the same time on the way out of the courthouse.
So this is kind of part of, I think, why you have the F me money now, and you're out to This was an overreaction swing one direction and then an overcorrection swing the other direction. And we're in the middle of it swinging hard the other direction. This is essentially
exactly. I couldn't have said it better. That's why The Reasonable Doubt podcast is my favorite hour of the week. I get to get you to distill it down to its bare essence.
Well, anyone who's ever been to a driving range and teed up a ball and hit one and it drifted hard left can tell you that the next one they hit's going hard right, because
exactly.
That's the
it's
way
so true.
That's the way we work. And I've seen it a million times with place kickers. So you're saying this thing has swung too hard, too fast, the other direction, and there's going to be things that we're going to find out in the upcoming days and weeks that will surprise us, and that everything sort of lives in the gray world, not in the black and the white, as we love to place it, right?
Right, exactly, because for some reason we're living specifically now in a very binary time, and it's the idea. I literally, and I know these, we've got the tweeters who hate it when I say literally, but I watched some coverage yesterday and saw people who remain nameless who commenting on the case, and was astonished that they were jumping on the bandwagon before they knew anything, just based on the government's perspective. I'm going to tell you something. For the idea that somehow you would be you would embrace a government perspective on anything is beyond me, because there's always, I shouldn't even say generally, there's almost always an axe to grind, and it will become apparent. So,
well, I'm just letting my mind sort of float along on a sea of your words. And I'm also trying to be very pragmatic and logical about this. Let me make an example or an analogy, and you tell me if it feels right or if I'm going down the wrong path. We're in the middle of this, special counsel Mueller thing, and as when you launch into these things, whether it's Whitewater, Clinton, Mueller, Russia, Trump, it ends up that a lot of the heads that roll and a lot of the damage that was done were from people who are lying under oath and who were soliciting money for this or that. It goes in a million different directions. The crime is one thing, but it spins off and turns into something else. And
Correct. This
thing, if I'm, reading between the lines, it's not so much for you about whether this happened or didn't happen. It was how it was handled, which is sort of what happens in these investigations. Everyone who's in jail right now or going to jail wasn't a Russian operative. There was somebody who was trying to cover something else, got busted, and now they're screwed. Is there an element of that to this?
There is, and that kind of goes back to what you were saying before. If you don't have a process that is adhered to, and I mean process literally, it's called due process for a reason. It's fundamental fairness. It is the fact that you hold people accountable and that there are certain rules that you abide by. And if you don't abide by the rules, you can have the horrible miscarriages of justice. I mean, it was not that long ago that the state of Illinois had to release more than 10 people who were on death row who were factually innocent. The idea that you could be factually innocent and on death row in a jurisdiction should give you pause before you want to believe anything the government is telling you, because there isn't a bigger mistake you can make in the, to my mind, in the justice system, whether it's fighting over money or fighting over liberty, than committing somebody to death and, oops, I'm sorry, you're innocent. I mean, that, at some point you convinced a jury beyond a reasonable doubt, by whatever means you did it, that this person was guilty, and we're going to take him out and we're going to kill him. And turns out, whoops, we were wrong. And so if you don't adhere to the process, you just get outrageous injustices. And but, so you can yes. you can say, well, you know, he brought it upon himself. You can say this, you can say that. All of that is assumes or presumes guilt. Everybody, if you just step back for a second and analyze the criticism or the hate that gets spewed, it all presumes guilt. And that's what's aggravating. To have a cop come out and do what he did yesterday is, if you would cloak that, taking anthropology, I had a great professor in college who used to have this technique where he would tell you a story, basically, but he would tell it and he would do it in terms of tribes. And he would always try to cloak his story in terms of a tribe in some third world country, okay? And then he would tell you the story, and he would get students to laugh. And then he would strip it down and change some of the details, and it would turn out it would be something that was happening in America. But because it was told to you with certain tropes and certain kinds of cliches, you could automatically laugh and see how ridiculous it was, except when it was you talking about yourself. That's what I looked at yesterday. All I could think was, if we were watching this, or somebody had told this story to you about what happened yesterday and told you that it was North Korea or that it was Communist China, and they'd come out and they'd announce that they found this thing and that the trial was a mere formality because they've already solved the case of this, that you just shake your head and you say, yeah, I can see that. It reminds me, another case that reminds me of is Amanda Knox. I mean, people used to... So we can't believe the Italian justice system. We can't believe this, right?
Yeah, the Amanda Knox thing was insane. That was in like, well, we have video surveillance of her making out with her boyfriend a mere 80 yards from the murder scene. Like, what? So what? that story, unless there's more about it, I don't know, seemed actually insane. And there was a guy who was around who was known as sort of a criminal who was drifting through town. But it's no different than what we start, although I am going to circle back and hold your feet to the fire just a little bit on the factual innocence part. But it's the Gary Condit thing. Like, hello, there was a guy who was arrested for conking
arrested
a woman on the
for
head.
Exactly for the same
whacking
thing.
Her in the head and dragging her out of the woods 6 months earlier. You don't think that fella could have done this? Jesus Christ.
I remember getting so much grief and so much hate from people when I suggested that that guy was the likely suspect. I mean, I was mocked unmercifully for suggesting that.
There's a great clip of the female DA or whomever it was who was just like, yeah, we're aware of that guy, but we're tired of talking about him. We want to focus on Condit. Like, okay. Boy. I sure hope you're not the sheriff that comes into my town if we ever need any law and order.
That's the other thing, you know, and it's only somebody has started to articulate the last 20 years, and I wish I could give them credit because it certainly wasn't. It started with the thing about convicting somebody, you know, the old, where there's smoke, there's fire, or if he didn't do this, he did something else. Yeah, that's true. But if he didn't do this, and then that means that somebody who did is walking around.
All right, let me hold your feet to the fire here for 1 second.
Please.
Okay. Now, you said earlier that there have been 10 guys that were on death row that were factually innocent, and they were on death row in Chicago. And you're likening that
in
to
Illinois.
In Illinois, sorry. You're likening that to Jussie Smollett.
I wouldn't say that I'm likening it, but I'm saying you've got a system that is set up that there is a history, and you've got to view it that way. And, you know, the same people who – the interesting thing about this story to me, and I'm sorry, I didn't even let you hold my feet to the fire, but I was going to say the interesting thing about this story is you've got it kind of unites the right and the left. The right is gleeful, and the left is cannibalizing. And so it is a uniting story in that sense. So
right.
Now I'll let you go hold my feet to the fire.
Okay. the kick off the silk monogram slippers, the cap bought you last week, and let's get those Tootsies over the Duraflame log. Is this a fair statement? They're guys that get let off of death row because the factual evidence was not there. And then there are guys who get let off of death row because the cop never got a warrant, kicked in the door of this guy's apartment, and grabbed the revolver from the nightstand with no warrant and no judicial anything. He went sort of rogue, which isn't to say that the guy didn't do the murder. It's to say the process was not upheld.
Well, that I'll push back on that because the I believe, and I've cited this, there's several studies that were done. I believe that virtually all of the ones that were done in Illinois and nationally were a product of the Innocence Project, which was Barry Scheck and Peter Neufeld's organization, and that they were exonerated by DNA evidence that they didn't have at the time. And there was some statistic, and I'll be wrong and somebody will tweet it out to me, but there was some statistic about in either 6 out of 10 cases or 7 out of 10 of these cases where people have been exonerated. And the Innocence Project is not, they don't, their writs of habeas corpus, which are the way generally that they overturn these things, are usually based on factual innocence. And so the factual innocence is that now they've got, for instance, a piece of clothing or a rape kit, and they're able to test it. You know, prior to 2003, in California, for instance, there was no generally accepted mitochondrial DNA testing. So now that they have that, they can do it, and they can exclude somebody who previously been convicted. And in 6 or 7 times out of 10, it was always a conviction where somebody was convicted by eyewitness testimony, which is called direct testimony, which is probably the most fallible.
Well, I'm not saying that that doesn't happen. I'm just saying, as an example, are we talking in the Smollett case, to the degree that you can talk about it, are we talking about factual evidence, or are we talking about a misuse of the process of collecting evidence?
Right now, I will tell you, they have not turned over any discovery. So as a lawyer, I can't tell you other than what they put out there yesterday. I will tell you that the process, in my humble opinion, was abused yesterday. I think demonstrably. I think any lawyer who watched that and didn't think that implicated the ABA model rules doesn't know the ABA model rules. That's number one. But number two, much of what was said, I know to be demonstrably false. So that, you know, I kept waiting to hear something that I didn't know already. And so that, to my mind, is a red flag. You know, for instance, let me just give you one example. He did it. One of the things that the police chief said yesterday is he did it because he was dissatisfied with his salary. Not only is that not true, they have video evidence that that's not true. And I know, and nobody, you know, certainly they never asked. They didn't do any investigation on that. They didn't talk to his lawyer. They didn't talk to anybody at the production company. They didn't talk to an agent. Nobody. I've done that. I know for a fact that's untrue. That's categorically untrue. So that's not the motivation, yet that was what was articulated as the motivation. And why do I think that's significant? Motive is not, they don't need motive for a crime. It's not an element of a crime. But it's inexplicable if there's no motive.
He said it
yesterday, right? Gary, what did he say? Gary's probably got the statement. I was too angry to take it down.
He can find it there. I always find it bizarre when they start weaving that kind of stuff in. But you're saying, to me, also, I always have a sad thought, which is everyone else, all the folks on the news outlets are like, $1.1 million, that's not enough to get by on? And I always think to myself, you back out taxes, you give your management 15%, you give your agent 10%, then there's alimony, and then you got your security and the pool man. And it's like, yeah, when the dust settles, settles, you'd be surprised how little that is. I think Mark and I are going to both sound like pompous asses for articulating that, but you would be surprised once all the stuff gets backed out.
And everybody who, well, I won't even go there. That's a whole other subject. You hear me chuckling.
I hear you chuckling because I know you have to pay the tax man on that. You know, and the reason...
It's like, do you ever go a month where there isn't some new tax you've never heard of that pops up that you're writing a check for?
All I want to... My whole thing is a very different angle than yours, which is I just want to choke everybody who wants me to pay my fair share. I just want to wring their neck like a bar rag. That's where my ire is. I should be mad at the state of California and the governor and the IRS and the franchise tax.
Where I should be, because that is a fundamental difference between the two of us. You want to go at the person who's spouting it off. I rage at the system.
I'm mad at the system, but I'm, for some reason, on a micro level, much more angry at the person who goes, you know, these people don't pay their fair share in tax. I'm like, oh, yeah, God, God. All right, but wait a minute. So Gary will find the news conference or whatever he's looking for. But so you're saying that they have to sort of graft a motive on in order to sort of build or bolster a case. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Well, because it makes no sense. They've got, like I said earlier, whale of a case that these two guys did it, but whale of a case, why would he? So there is no answer to that. And by the way, there was no investigation as to that. And by the way, he was on his way back to talk to them again, which was their request. And lo and behold, nobody asked, well, wait a second, you were doing a grand jury. Why did you stop the grand jury all of a sudden and just file a criminal complaint? Stay tuned, and I'll tell you next week.
All right, so I'm going to have Mark possibly remain silent when I say it doesn't seem highly likely that we're going to find out a bunch of evidence that he was an innocent victim of a brutal street attack, and it was as reported initially. But we may find out many other things to do with the process and how he was treated along the way that could swing things his direction in a positive way.
Well, I would probably push back on that.
Go ahead.
I have not seen anything that supports this idea or the narrative that they put out there that he was in cahoots with anything. They've got a whale of a case against the two guys. The two brothers, but that's it.
And the two brothers seem pretty flawed in the credible witness department. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, you're not going to get any pushback from me on that.
Okay, let me tell you guys about ZipRecruiter. And Gary, do you have the statement?
Everything Mark said was almost exactly right. They called it a publicity stunt, and they said it was motivated by dissatisfaction with his salary.
I always feel as a civilian watching the news, why is, that feels neither here nor there, and also doesn't feel that provable, and also doesn't feel like a straight line to more a bigger salary.
That's a negotiating technique. By the way, every person in TV that I've ever represented will tell you that's not, you know, going out and faking an assault and getting a scar on your face is not the way to a higher salary.
They would be right. ZipRecruiter. Oh, wait a minute. Did Morton Downey Jr. get a raise? All right. ZipRecruiter. Don't hire him. He's dead. Hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, confusing review process. Today, hiring is easy. Just go to one place, ZipRecruiter.com/doubt. That is ZipRecruiter.com/doubt. Plus, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As the applications come rolling in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights top candidates so you never miss a great match. 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. That's ZipRecruiter, right, Gary?
That's absolutely right. Right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ziprecruiter.com/doubt. That's ziprecruiter.com/doubt. ZipRecruiter.com/doubt. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
My first stand-up special is coming to a theater near you. The first round is going to air this Wednesday, February 27th, so you can go to tugg.com or adamcarolla.com/events and find out where it is and how close it is and go out and see it. Mark, I'll invite you to the premiere in Burbank if you're in town on Wednesday. It is my first stand-up special. It's an hour. It's actually about 72 minutes, and I'm very proud of it. So.
How did you get to the point where this is your first? If you had asked me, I could have passed a polygraph that this would have been maybe your 10th.
I was always a talker and always sort of a humorist, but I wasn't really a stand-up. I always just sort of did my thing on The Man Show or Crank Yankers or Loveline or whatever it was, but I never went out as a stand-up, and that's why it took all these years.
Would you say you're in the lineage of a Mark Twain or a Lenny Bruce?
This thing is, and I'm glad you brought that up, and I'll give you a satisfying only to myself answer. If you took Lenny Bruce and Mark Twain and put them in a Cuisinart and poured them into a tumbler, you would have not Taco Bell material, my stand-up special.
I love it. There you go.
Mark, what do you got?
I got Tenny, Mediterranean Tapas Down South, Engine Company 28, downtown L.A., and at Terminal 8 at LAX. I've got The V Palm Springs, Gary's favorite place. I've got the Casa Tropicana, and we've got the Prova Pizzeria, Grand Central Terminal, and Times Square.
All right, so you will update us next episode with more Jussie Smollett things.
Oh,
and
yes.
You're saying there's stuff out there that we haven't thought of or dreamt of yet.
Yep.
I love it. And
stay tuned.
Hopefully see you Wednesday night. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla from Mark Garriga saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.